RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So to the rising cost of energy and criticism of the gentailers, we had Shane Jones on the program Wednesday criticizing the gentailers. That's available as a replay, by the way. So big questions are being asked about the viability of our energy system, with high prices causing some big businesses to turn off production. Shane Jones threatening the government could intervene. He's issued a broadside at the big four generator retailers, saying they're focused on profiteering over the wider benefits of secure energy. Wholesale power prices have doubled in the past 3 weeks, in part because our hydro lake storage is about 57% of what it would normally be at this time of year. Wholesale power prices on the spot market were more than $900 on Wednesday. Some major users, as we've been hearing, say soaring power prices are putting their viability at risk, and two timber mills say they are considering closing. So we invited the Electricity Authority to RCR to talk about rising energy prices and the closure of the pulp and timber mills as a result. Shane Jones, I think, has been reported saying that they should be offering them some kind of deal. Anyway, the Electricity Authority declined to come on RCR, but did provide the following statement. I'll read it out. Wholesale electricity prices are reflecting current market conditions. A shortage of gas combined with low rain and inflows into our hydro lakes has created a severe fuel shortage, driving up prices. The transition to electrification is accelerating as a result of the gas situation, and this is putting immediate pressure on our wholesale market, they tell us. While we recognize the market appears to be doing what it is designed to do, high prices reflecting lower supply, we're concerned about the outcomes for consumers over the next couple of years of the transition to electrification as new generation comes online, as well as innovations to start to alleviate the pressures we're seeing now. We're also concerned, they say, that participants are not accelerating their own responses, that's investment, hedging behavior, innovation, etc., to match the quickening pace of the transition and as consumers need. We're taking the current wholesale market situation extremely seriously, and we'll be using our powers to seek additional info about the current pricing, and we'll be making that public. There are the incentives for new investment and innovation, and both are vital, they're saying, for getting New Zealand through the transition and lowering power prices in the short and long term. And they end by saying, we've also ramped up our reporting and monitoring of not only investment into new generation, but the speed with which that is effectively coming to market. So a bit of a read there, but important to get everything on the table. We've invited Simon Court, ACT List MP, and their energy and resources spokesperson onto RCR to talk about this. Simon, welcome back to RCR. I think we've chatted before. Nice to have you back.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you to Reality Check listeners for having me.
All right. I'm sure they appreciate that. So you just heard me read out that statement from the Electricity Authority, and I think there's been a criticism. Expert Jeff Bertram is quoted by RNZ as saying, it's a cartel. It's been set up to make profits when there are shortages. How can that benefit our national interest? How can it?
Well, I don't have a view on whether it's a cartel, but the Electricity Authority's comments sound like they could have been written for a previous Labor Greens government. This exclusive focus on this transition to an electrical future completely ignores the fact that many New Zealand businesses and households are dependent and want to continue to rely on natural gas as a fuel that either is a manufacturing input to make fantastic products like methanol that ends up in all of the plastics and paints and resins and even your very expensive raincoats that people wear tramping, all of the other products that we make from natural gas, fertilizer, ammonia, urea at Balance and Kapuni, where I visited a couple of weeks ago, as well as being an energy input for wood processing. You know, I spoke to a representative of one of the big dairy companies today, and I said, how are you feeling about the energy prices? And he said, well, our main focus is on how we get move away from coal to a low emissions technology. But the only obvious and reasonably priced one is natural gas. So what I'm focused on at the moment is how do we make sure that natural gas is accepted as part of our energy future, that if we don't have organisations like the Electricity Authority keep banging on about some kind of energy transition away from natural gas, that's a policy of a previous government. What we want to do, what the current coalition government wants to do and what the ACT Party wants to do is make sure that we have enough affordable, reliable energy, whether it's electricity or gas, and that we don't have government agencies and policymakers telling us which fuel we should be allowed to use. We've got to focus on abundance, and that will bring prices down.
Though the gas supply is contracting ever more as we go forward because we don't have new fields, right? So it's a real bind, isn't it?
Well, it is. If you take that assumption, in fact, when you look at our geology, when you look at our prospectivity, there's been a lot of seismic research done around New Zealand, including further offshore in Taranaki, onshore in Taranaki, the east coast of New Zealand off East Cape, and a fantastic prospectivity off Canterbury in the Canterbury Basin there. Such good prospectivity, in fact, that an Australian exploration company had a rig en route to New Zealand in 2020 when the previous Labor government shut down the borders. They asked for an extension of their permit time, and Megan Woods and the Labor government back in 2020 declined it. So their permit expired, and because of the ban on oil and gas exploration, they haven't been able to get another one. But they were prepared to spend $1 million a day for about 3 months developing their knowledge of that resource in Canterbury. So we do have natural gas here. It's available to us if we want to go and get it. The problem is that while you've got a couple of political parties in Parliament, a big one, Labor, and a smaller one, the Greens, saying that gas is not part of our future, what that means is no one's coming to New Zealand, or none of our domestic investors are going to go out and explore and develop that resource in case a future government decides that actually we're going to switch it off for you and your entire investment's going to be lost. That's why I put out an open invitation, an open letter today, inviting all parties in opposition to come together with the parties in the coalition government to agree on a natural gas accord, similar to the 1990s retirement savings accord. We just decided as a group of political parties that we would take retirement savings and super off the political football field, that kind of thing shouldn't be a political football. I say we should take the same approach to natural gas as an energy and manufacturing input. So we're going to need it well past 2050. We're apparently going to get to net zero. Probably going to need it well past 2100. It should not be a political football. I want all parties to come together and sign up to a natural gas accord. That's how we'll get investment unlocked.
Is it time to stop talking about net zero? Come on.
Well, Paul, I think most of the businesses that I go to visit, whether it's, you know, the big fertilizer manufacturer like Balance at Kapuni, or I go and meet with two big wood processing facilities, including the largest one in New Zealand in the past few weeks, their focus is on energy efficiency. How can they produce the best products for New Zealand and international consumers at the best price, and how can they keep as much of their manufacturing and supply chain here in New Zealand? Because that actually helps to make them more resilient as a business. It insulates them from international market price shocks, for example. They want to do that, but they can only do that if they've got access to plentiful and affordable resources like natural gas. So look, these businesses are focused on making their businesses, their business processes, their energy use more efficient. They'll get to net zero anyway without any government help or encouragement, simply because they want to be more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, as some kind of magical thinking, you know, that's outside of business. Good to hear you say that. Now, Shane Jones is saying there are provisions under the existing electricity legislation that enables the Crown to use a code of conduct which has legal force to change the behaviour of the gentailers. Would you support using some legal force and going a bit harder, like he's saying?
Well, I think Minister Jones has correctly identified that the electricity market, the way it's set up, and the behaviour of the gentailers, while they're just responding rationally to the way the market is set up, it's really unhelpful to New Zealand households and New Zealand businesses. But the problem is the price in the market is simply reflecting scarcity and a great nervousness amongst energy users. That's the big timber mills, the wood processors, you know, the pulp and paper guys, OG fibre, but also you've got to remember all of our recycled glass in New Zealand depends on being able to melt it using natural gas. Like all of these businesses, they are really, really nervous that they won't have access to either enough electricity or enough gas in the next few months. And that's what's causing the spike. So I agree with Minister Jones, we're in a terrible situation and, you know, we don't want businesses shutting down in the regions. Rather than try to control the price using government levers, we really should be focusing on unlocking supply and giving these businesses confidence to invest. So ACT would take a different approach to that when it comes to public policy.
The Finance Minister, Nicola Willis, is reported by Newstalk ZB that she understands the government may have to go to drastic measures like importing gas to give relief for business. And she says she's hearing there's a lot of pain and pressure being felt by business because of these high prices. In other words, consideration of importing liquefied gas to ease power problems. Would you support that?
Well, I certainly have had a number of approaches from people who've said, hey, look, if New Zealand ever wants to set up an import terminal for LNG, you know, Germany's just built four of them in response to the restrictions on Russian gas that they previously depended on. There are all kinds of businesses, you know, whether it's a big oil company or gas company will come and do that for us. Of course, we'll pay for it. The consumers and businesses who need the gas will pay for it. It also means that instead of us developing our own natural resources, which, you know, I understand are abundant in New Zealand, provide us with hundreds of years of natural gas supply if we go out and get it,
okay.
We'd suddenly become dependent on imported gas and essentially exposed to the spot market price in Japan or South Korea.
I think they're talking about a short-term fix is the impression I got.
Well, no one's going to go out and spend billions of dollars on building an import LNG terminal and call that a short-term fix.
So that's a big infrastructure item, obviously, then.
Yeah, I mean, it's an LNG import terminal is a very, very large piece of infrastructure. And you know, what I've heard from the oil companies here, the people who build this kind of infrastructure, is they'd happily build us one on the basis that New Zealand signed up to use it in perpetuity. And that would essentially sterilise the opportunity for us to go and access our own natural resources. And so I think, you know, we need to be thinking as much about energy security and national security in the same sense. You know, it's important we have our own resources here in New Zealand and that we develop them and that we're not entirely reliant on global supply chains.
I remember when the electricity companies were sold off, and I remember the days when there was abundant electricity, actually, and that's why homes weren't insulated, because there was so much electricity, you could just bung on the heater, any room, it didn't matter. That was a social contract. It's been broken. Energy's different from anything else, isn't it, Simon? It underpins fundamentally a standard of living. We can't have this situation, surely. We just can't have it.
No, you're absolutely right. So the decision to create abundant electricity and energy was taken in the 1960s and 70s in New Zealand. You know, in my office, I've still got a small vial of Maui crude oil from the first strike in 1967. You know, that was seen as an opportunity. You know, oil and gas, building large hydro schemes, you know, building our first geothermal power stations at places like Wairakei and Central North Island. Abundant energy was seen as a way to transform our economy and to allow New Zealanders to become wealthy. And if we became wealthy, we could afford better healthcare, better education, you know, of course, better cars and TVs as well, which were pretty scarce back in the 70s and 80s when I was growing up. But since the 1990s, we haven't had that large-scale investment in infrastructure. It's almost like there was an allergic reaction to the Rob Muldoon Think Big days when the government said, we'll lead on infrastructure, and all of a sudden, no one's leading. Now we have an infrastructure deficit in water and wastewater. Our roads are falling to bits, you know, and of course, electricity and energy production has been largely left to the private sector, but then we've put this terribly high and sharp fence around them and said, oh, well, okay, you can't really develop hydroelectricity because, you know, that's off limits now. Or you can't do gas development because, you know, you're killing the planet over there. You could do geothermal, but, oh, geez, you know, there's a whole lot of cultural issues around that. So what are we left with? Wind turbines and solar panels? I mean, they don't work on the cold, still winter night. And that's why we're going to continue to need natural gas at the same time as we develop renewables.
Isn't it time to think nuclear? Really, come on. That would solve everything, wouldn't it, in the end?
Well, Well, Paul, I'm a civil engineer, and I also, at one point when it was trendy, I used to call myself an environmental engineer when I worked in the waste industry. That was to disguise myself at conferences. If I ever ran into a greenie, I'd tell them I was an environmental engineer. The thing is, Paul, you know, if you think about how hard it is for New Zealand infrastructure operators and government even to deliver the City Rail Link tunnel in Auckland, yeah, it's taken twice as long, probably cost twice as much. Can you imagine a New Zealand government department or business trying to get resource consents for or build a nuclear power station? Now, I've seen a map which shows where it would go. It would go somewhere in the North Island, you know, north of the Kaipara Harbour, north of Auckland. That was regarded as the ideal place by the electricity ministry back in the 60s. But I don't know whether New Zealand actually needs that or if we can actually rely on our own natural resources before we move to nuclear. But it may well be something that happens in the next...
Need to get a move on, don't we? There are those gas fields you talked about, and people can come and do the exploration, but it takes yonks from drilling the holes to extracting the gas, and time, the clock is ticking.
Some of the fields onshore or near shore, you could probably get up in 2 to 5 years. Now, it does sound like a long time, but the stuff we can do in the meantime to manage demand, it's that long run. What happens after that? You know, people who are developing those resources, companies who are buying the plant and equipment and setting up manufacturing on the basis that gas will be available, they need to know that a future government isn't going to come and pull the rug out from under them. And that's why this week I sent an open letter to all political parties, to Chris Hipkins, to Chloe Swarbrick, to Debbie Naruapaka of the opposition parties, and I said, come and sign up to a natural gas accord where you commit to taking this off the off the political football field. We don't want gas to be a political football in the future. We want these investments to be able to proceed with all international and domestic investors and operators knowing that gas will continue to be available and it won't be a political football. Look, I'm waiting to hear back from them. And what I'm hoping is by the end of the day, they'll agree to meet me. I've offered to present to their caucus, Paul. I'm saying that if you're a Green caucus member, you've probably only ever been offered the Green Kool-Aid. I want to offer them a different perspective, you know, as a civil engineer, as someone who's worked in various industries, to say this is why gas is important. We want to have more renewable energy. We want more affordable energy. But we also need this gas to underpin our manufacturing base and our wealth, particularly in provinces and the regions. So I'm hoping to get a positive response. But otherwise, you know, if they don't get back to me today, I'll be here tomorrow and the next day. It's an open offer.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall for that, by the way, just saying. Just to wind up, in Ohakuni, Winstone's Mill employs 300. The town has a population of 1,000. And it's not just them. Is there any assistance? Is there any role of government, whoever, to come in and kind of stand behind some of these industries and employers? The case I mentioned, it's grim otherwise in the short term. What do you think about that?
I think government certainly does have a role, Paul. I mean, I'm speaking to you on behalf of the ACT Party as an energy spokesperson. I have a different role in government. I have a role as Undersecretary for Infrastructure Funding and Financing and Resource Management Reform. There is stuff we can do for businesses to get out of their way. So if Winstones, for example, wants to install a new boiler or a new process, you know, they shouldn't have to spend years getting consent for it. We can certainly solve that part of the regulatory problem. When it comes to energy, government has to be very, very positive and adamant about what we want. And what we want is abundant energy. We shouldn't care about where it comes from, whether it's renewable or gas, geothermal, I mean, you know, potentially some point in the future, nuclear. Government policy and regulation should be clearing the playing field so we have abundant energy available where it's needed for business at an affordable price. And, you know, we can't turn a switch overnight and make that happen. But that's certainly my focus and one of the reasons why I got into politics and you know, hung up my hard hat and parked the work boots. So, you know, we'll do our best.
You can't write them a check, you know, to bring down the cost of energy in the meantime. Otherwise, all these jobs go potentially. That's a disaster.
Yeah, what I hope is that when stones are during their temporary shutdown are going to have an opportunity to do a bit of routine maintenance, you know, sweep out the dust, you know, from the factory.
Use that
power prices, hopefully power prices should come down in the next few weeks. The peak should drop off. But the best thing the government can do is just provide certainty to say, look, you know, if you want to invest in plant and equipment that uses natural gas, we'll stand behind you and make sure that the gas is available and that future governments don't turn it off. But, you know, we're going to have to get these other political parties to agree to it. Otherwise, you know, really what we're saying is Labor and the Greens don't care about regional jobs. They don't care about deindustrialising New Zealand. They are the vandals and the wreckers that I always assumed they were. I'm giving them an opportunity to come clean and actually sign up to a natural gas accord so that New Zealand businesses like Winstones and all of those towns like Owakuni, which depend on those businesses, can have a future.
Okay. Simon Court, Energy and Resources Spokesperson for ACT. Thanks for coming back on, Simon.
Thanks, Paul. You're welcome. And hope your reality check listeners have a great day.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.